shut up and get ready to say goodbye. We want to thank you for listening today to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Please don't forget we're a listener-supported program at theguyjamesshow.com. Thanks for listening, folks. Do remember, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. See you next time.
Easily because he's a true conservative.
Same mutual respect. Choose collaboration instead of confrontation. Stop wasting money on lawyers. Don't drag this out for 5 years. A collaborative divorce is better for the children, family, and friends. Collaboration costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
The European Central Bank left interest rates at 3.5% today after raising rates in December. The Eurozone contains 13 countries and accounts for more than 15% of the world's gross domestic product. In outer space, astronauts have jettisoned protective space quilts in a third spacewalk, the most ever in such a brief amount of time without the space shuttle attached to it. Eastman Kodak has announced it will cut as many as 3,000 jobs as the company makes changes to focus on digital imaging, consumer photography, and commercial printing. Britain's largest retailer, Tesco, announced plans to open stores in the U.S. Tesco will open a chain of small convenience stores similar to that of 7-Elevens throughout the country. 20 stores will open in the Phoenix area, with stores in Los Angeles and San Diego to follow. BMW says it sold a record-setting number of vehicles in Asia last year. The world's largest luxury car maker posted a sales increase of almost 14% on the Asian continent. ESPN is expected to announce today it will use Verizon Wireless for its shuttered cell phone service. The poor response led Disney to pull the plug on its mobile ESPN last year. The company expects to do better with access to Verizon's 59 million customers. Light sweet crude is trading at $58.03 a barrel in the New York Mercantile Exchange. And on Wall Street at this hour, the Dow Jones is down 46, the NASDAQ is down 1, and the S&P 500 is down 3. There's more news at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Jay Gallet.
This is a top to, you know, what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11,
oh,
11,
and most of
11,
and then amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show. It's Foxed Up with John Fox, where we turn Conversation Radio into Conservation Radio. Foxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions of Sydney, Australia, and the Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters. They're building the American dream every day. B1 Louder by ringing 877-443-2366. That's 877, the numeral 4, head on. And now, your host, the ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox!
All right, everybody, welcome aboard. It's Foxed Up again. Sorry about missing yesterday. There was just really, really ugly weather in West Virginia, and poor Zach couldn't get over the bloody bridge. What are you going to do? And that's Mother Nature for you. So welcome aboard, folks. It's, what is it, Friday over on this part of the world. It's probably Thursday afternoon, Thursday evening, wherever you are. And got a bunch of stuff to go through, and I'm telling you, I'm not fully awake today. Just one of those really, really slow mornings. So we're going to play it, you know, loose today. But last night, there was a very interesting debate on Australian television, and there should be a link to the transcript on today's blog post. But if you go to abc.net.au and go to the 7:30 report page, last night there was a debate between Malcolm Turnbull, who is the Howard government's new environmental spokesman, Roddy Raw, and he's a bit of a denier, versus Peter Garrett, former lead singer of Midnight Oil, now turned politician, who handles the opposition's environmental portfolio. And the 7:30 report dedicated the full half hour to these two just debating the environment and what it is that we face. And Kerry O'Brien, the reporter who handles the 7:30 report, is, first of all, used to work for the Labor Party, from what I understand, and he had fun last night. We'll just say that I think he enjoyed it last night. He opened the debate by asking each of these men when they became a convert to the science, how much of a crisis do we face when it comes to global warming and climate change, and the fact that, you know, some way, somehow, people in the Howard government say that they now believe in the link between greenhouse gas emissions and global warming, but they yet don't believe necessarily that global warming has anything to do with the five-year drought, which I don't understand how you can justify that thinking. However, this is how these guys work. And after they talked about a new kind of push for a federalizing of the water systems here, taking it away from the states, Kerry gets into this whole thing about asking them, you know, really what they think, and Kerry O'Brien says, okay, he asked Turnbull, he says, when did you become a convert to the broad body of science warnings about greenhouse emissions, and before we start looking at solutions, how do you define the problem? In your view, how big a crisis do we all face? And Turnbull, you know, has this bit of denier mask over his answer straight away. He says, well, I think it's a very large challenge. I don't like using words like crisis because I don't think it's helping. And with respect to Peter there, I think Peter's strategy this week has been to try to create a sense of panic, almost hysteria over the issue. So right there, you know, there's still a bit of the denier in there, because it's not about creating panic. It's about the fact that suddenly government here is paying attention to the issue of climate change, because public opinion is so far on the side of accepting that we face some serious problems. And the IPCC report that came out last week, where, you know, when these international scientists got together, they said that this final report would only include stuff where there's a consensus, where there's absolutely, you know, no argument amongst them. So things that there was might still be debate on, they just completely left out. However, when they ask, you know, and so he goes on about, you know, it's a challenge, and then trying to connect it or not connect it to the water shortage problem that we're facing. And it just makes no sense, but the same question is asked to Peter Garrett, and he says, well, Kerry, I've had strong interest and campaigned on it for a number of years, and certainly in my time as the ACF president, which I believe is the Australian Conservation Fund, we were aware that climate change and the sort of reports we were getting from the scientists about the prospects of a warming world were becoming increasingly validated. Look, we're not trying to panic people. We're just trying to recognize what the actual situation is. And when you have a report by the world's best scientists collecting the data now over a number of years about the kind of impact that we are having as we put greenhouse gases into the atmosphere, and the prospects of a warming world, and the sorts of impacts and effects but basically the science has become somewhat undeniable. You know, it's just... I don't see how you can be a denier anymore. You know, you seriously have to be living under a rock. And living in this country, it's just become so obvious with the way the place is drying out that we're in grave, grave danger. And one of the things that's interesting that has come out in the very energetic discussions that have been happening in Question Time in Parliament this week over this issue. John Howard's showing his colors that, you know, he's basically tied to the coal mafia, and that coal money, you know, that their entire discussion is that we won't lose mining jobs, we won't lose mining jobs, we're not going to take on an environmental policy that, you know, and they're the ones using the scare tactics. When Peter Garrett last night kept emphasizing the fact that the carbon trading market and other related things that, you know, was worth some $20 billion last year, and they're expecting to be $30 or $40 billion this year, Australia is locked out of because they haven't signed on to Kyoto, and they haven't become part of the international move to try and limit the damage. It's not even fix the problem anymore. We're way past that. Right now we're trying to limit the damage over the next 20 to 30 years by trying to act now. So I do believe that we're coming up on our first break. So we're going to do that. And you're listening to Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network. We're going to come back and talk a little bit more about, you know, the discussions happening over here in Australia. And then we have our track of the day. We're going to do a little bit of acoustic hip-hop. So we'll be doing a little bit of Everlast later. So get in on the program, 1-877-443-2366, or email me, John, J-O-N, at headonradionetwork.com, and we'll be right back after this.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business, anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network. Wednesday night prayer meeting on Head On with Bob Kincaid opens up a whole new realm of spirituality. Touch others. Reach out and touch faith. Join Brother Bob every Wednesday night for prayer meeting services here in the Tabernacle of Common Sense. Only on the Head On Radio Network and chat at headonradionetwork.com.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected? Would you feel scared? Proud? Relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business? Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS? What if you established your own path, one that others might follow? Would you rather make your own way or spend your life saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or go to peacecorps.gov.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network. Now, I kind of lost the plot in my own brain there as we're going out to the break. What I wanted to bring up was an interesting tidbit that's come up in all this discussion. There's an Australian energy-producing outfit that has a system of a geo-solar thermal plant. Now, they reckon, and they've run tests, there's a huge amount of geothermal energy capability in Australia, especially, you know, out the center of the outback, where you've got this really, really hard earth that's just baked. They reckon, and there's good science behind it, that in 10 years they could be generating baseload grid power for Australia purely off of solar energy and trapped heat energy in the rock. Now, Johnny Howard makes no mention of any of this technology in the discussion papers on the environment and whatnot that have come out recently. However, he has been given a first-hand tour of the design facility. And a very right-wingish talk show host that I don't like here went on the tour with him. And after having Peter Garrett on his program, said, I'm going to send all the materials back to Johnny Howard and remind him that he does know that this exists. Now, Johnny Howard's pushing constantly for, you know, 25 to 50 nuclear plants in Australia, which is just stupid. And we don't even have the technology to do it here, really. You know, it's at least 15 years away when we have so many other technologies that are much closer to being reality, especially in this country, in the world of solar. And also tidal power is another thing that could be very viable in Australia and be viable now. So, you know, there's all this discussion about clean coal and, which is still a pipe dream, still at least 10 years away. If at all. No one's done it yet. Why it still is a conversation piece, I don't understand. But there are better ways forward for Australia. And the Australian of the Year, this guy, Mr. Flannery, who had a really great spot on Late Line night before last, said that seriously, Australia's export of coal is not in the national interest when you look at the damage that's done by all that coal. Now, how we get off it is the big question, and this geothermal solar whoosie-whats-his system sounds like it's probably, you know, a perfect match for Australia. You know, 95% of the Australian population lives within 1 hour's drive of the ocean. So we have this entire, you know, we have this huge heat sink in which to seems to be a very much a reality of in 10 years, if we started building the system now, Australia could be producing virtually all of its baseline grid power for free. Whose interests does that not serve? You tell me. But I'm just really happy that the debates become, you know, right up front, and one of the big hopes is that Australia will be forced by public opinion alone to sign on to Kyoto, and that would leave the United States just flapping in the breeze. And I think that could do a lot to put pressure on the United States to finally sign on. But we'll see if that happens. And with that, we're going to move on to today's track of the day. And I'm not even sure why I picked this yesterday. Everlast, whose real name is Eric Schrody. I dig what this guy ended up doing in his solo career. You know, it's acoustic guitars and hip-hop and some really, really groovy stuff, but some very telling lyrics. Somewhere along the piece, after he went solo, he had a massive heart attack, and the artwork inside of I think it's the second record. You open it up and you actually see this picture of his chest with the bypass scar going down the middle of his chest, and there's just some really, really interesting lyrics. And the simple fact that, you know, after years with a group called House of Pain, you know, living the high party, snorting and drinking kind of lifestyle, realized that he couldn't keep it up. This was going to kill him. And so he went back and kind of retaught himself how to play guitar again, something that had been lost with the hugeness of House of Pain, and started mixing the influences together. And I reckon, you know, came up with a really interesting kind of a sound, and unfortunately he's without a label at the moment, from what I understand. But I believe that this track is off of Whitey Ford Sings the Blues. And just a great lyric. And I think that there's a lot to this lyric about our society. So without further ado, The Ends from Everlast. Roll it, Zach.
Some people were robbed their mother for the ends. Rats snitch on one another for the ends. Sometimes kids get murdered for the ends. So before we go any further, I want my ends. I knew this cat named Bill didn't have a dollar. He was all the material Ivy League scholar. Had a PhD, had an MBA. But now he's waiting tables cause there's rent to pay. Companies downsizing, inflation's rising. Can't find a job, he's feeling kind of stressed. Doesn't even feel the effects when he says, forgot to count how many times he's been blessed. So he falls off track, starts smoking the crack. And once it hits his brain, starts to chain react. Sells the shirt off his back, shoes off his feet. He's losing all his teeth, now he's out in the street. All of a sudden, it's like Jesse James trying to stick up his holding watches and chains. But he's from business school and is nervous with the tools. So he ends up on his back in a bloody pool for the ends. Some people were robbed, they mother for the ends. Rats stitch on one another for the ends. Sometimes kids get murdered.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competency and training. UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. It's their job to provide manpower. They build partnerships based on respect and trust. They provide skilled, responsible millwrights and carpenters to meet the challenge of any project because they believe and what they're doing and are so very committed to getting each and every job done right, they include a clause in your contract that eliminates work slowdown and jurisdictional disputes because they believe that, as professionals, they can discuss and solve any problem while keeping your project on target on time. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank the men and women of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights for building the American dream and saving the American dream. Thank you.
The chicks are crazy for a certain burly wolf, a real shocker.
Broadcast veteran Jeff Allen Wolf brings his gig to the internets. From sunny Arizona, weekdays 9 to noon Eastern Time on the Head On Radio Network. For more information, go to headonradionetwork.com.
Just to hold his paw and say, oh, Wolfie, ain't you the one? Oh, Wolfie, ain't we got...
Hi, you've reached the Johnsons. We're not available to take your call. If you're calling about the apartment for rent, please leave your name and number after the beep, and someone will get back to you.
Hi, my name is Sanjay Rana. I would like to make an appointment to see the apartment.
Oh, hi, this is Robin DiPaola, and I'm calling about the apartment. Please give me a call back at 2.
Hi, hello. This is Rafael Paredes. Please call me back at 718.
This is Jeannie Chu. I'd like to talk to you about the apartment. If you can please call me back.
Hello, my name's Clayton Anderson. I'm calling about the ad in the Sunday paper.
Oh, hello. This is Mrs. Johnson. You must be calling about the apartment.
I am. Is it still available?
Well, you're the first person to call about it. Are you available?
Housing discrimination of all kinds is illegal in the U.S. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing. It's not an option. It's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
And, boy, John's got some revoicing to do. The Jeff Allen Wolf Show, what is it, 11 to 2 Eastern daily. And Joe Vecchio is going to be making his return very, very, very shortly here. With everything that's been going on at the Head On Radio Network with Bob and Agnes having to head out of town for a bit, having to do a little bit of shifting of things, and so just got to get the production facility here in Sydney completely worked out, and we will have Joe back on air very, very, very shortly. So hopefully even tomorrow if we're lucky. But just in a sign of how far behind the curve the United States still is when it comes to policy on the environment, from InsideGreenTech.com, this came out February 6th, green tech industries feel slighted by the U.S. budget. Says U.S. President George Bush has proposed increasing the U.S. Department of Energy's budget to $24.3 billion, or about 7% from its $22.8 billion current appropriation. The administration has said it wants boosts in spending for research into new technologies like biofuel, hydrogen fuel, and coal and vehicles. While $1 billion or so dollars of the budget is directly earmarked for the renewable energy industry, that's only $60 million or 5% more than last year. Green tech industry leaders are wondering whether it's enough. Among other budget initiatives for fiscal year 2008, the White House is also seeking $9 billion in authority for loan guarantees for advanced energy technologies. The Solar Energy Industries Association expects solar will see a good portion of those loan guarantees. But Association President Ron Resch wasn't afraid to make like Oliver Twist and ask for more. The administration's request fund solar water heating research at just $2 million and concentrating solar power at just $9 million. It is important that Congress recognize the vital contributions that these technologies can make to our energy security, said Resch. Moreover, the budget does not include a long-term extension of the federal solar investment tax credits, which is the single most important policy affecting solar development. We urge Congress to enact an eight-year extension of the federal solar investment tax credits as contained in H.R. 550, the Securing America's Energy Independence Act of 2007. And this is just like what we went through here in Australia, which kind of relaunched the environment in the public's mind and in the media, was the fact that there was this petition over a very similar situation where the Howard government was not expanding and very possibly not renewing tax credits for people who put solar cells on their homes. And there was a huge outpouring in the media on the petition, and the petition was delivered to government, and that kind of was the catalyst that started this whole process off. And we're seeing now the further results of that, because that happened all right before Parliament closed up for the 2007 session, or 2006 session, and was gone for 2 months. So they've only been back debating and doing their business just since this week. And there's been a whole lot of discussion in the media. You know, the Australian of the Year was announced, and was actually a well-spoken and outspoken environmentalist. So for the next year, he gets a lot of camera time, and he also, at some point this year, gets to actually speak to those in government, in Parliament, and lay down what he believes are the right steps to take, and point out, hopefully in dramatic fashion, the lack of thought or real action when it comes to environmental policy in Australia. You know, Australia are the single largest polluters per capita on the planet. Okay, we're only responsible for 3% of the global emissions, you know, which is still small compared to the United States or China. But however, if you actually look at China closely, they have higher goals for the amount of solar power in their grid than Australia or the United States do. And per capita, because there's so many more people, their per capita rating is quite good by international standards. So when you hear U.S. politicians and Australian politicians going off that China's not signed on to Kyoto, that's slightly disingenuous. And constantly saying, well, you know, they're about to overtake America in total emissions. However, they're doing it with, what, 5-8 times the population? I mean, let's be realistic about this on who's doing what. And I guarantee you that if Australia and the United States sign on to Kyoto, China and India will be straight in there. I'd be willing to put money on that, because that's basically what the Chinese have said. You know, why should we, when the people that cause most of the problem don't seem to care? And that's something that we have to rectify. This has to be a bloody global effort. We have we have no other choice. And the other day, Timber rang up right towards the end of the show and brought up a really, really good point. And I'm trying to find out some more information along this vein, which is, you know, I talk a lot about, you know, new electric vehicles or, you know, compressed air vehicles and gadgets that will be, quote-unquote, more environmentally friendly, less of a carbon footprint. But he was asking about the manufacturing process. How clean is that? And I think it's a very good point to make. And I would think that there have to be improvements just in the simple fact of, to take the Tesla Roadster, for example. The motor that propels this lotus-eating machine weighs only, I believe, 70 kilos. So 140 pounds. Now, that has got to be, you know, a fraction of your standard 4, 6, or 8-cylinder petrol motor. So the heavy machinery in the assembly line would have to be utilizing less. And in fact, Tesla says that two regular human beings can pick up the motor and set it into its position in the vehicle. And in their situation with the Phoenix motor cars, you know, the batteries that have now 5-year cycles of life can be fully recycled and returned back to the manufacturers. So there are signs, but I think there are some valid questions there on how, I mean, you know, some people make claims that, you know, you get an electric car, you're just moving the pollution somewhere. Well, to a point right now, that's true. But if we continue to green up our power grids and produce more electricity locally via wind and solar, which I think there's going to have to be a serious kind of revamping on how the grid works. And I have a friend of mine who actually works on the Sydney power grid, and we have discussions about this stuff all the time, where he said, you know, the issues that he saw with things like solar and wind power was loss over distance. And I make the point that the grid then needs some rethinking and more localized generation and not so much trying to centralize the supply. And there, I think that this is probably where things will end up going. I mean, you already have this happening in a very organic fashion, where on some of these kind of communal plots where people are creating green communities, you know, they're setting up a mini grid system in many of these places. You know, every dwelling has their solar power, you know, either on freestanding panels or roof tiles or on top of the roofs, solar water heat, and all of the extra power gets fed locally into their own grid. Add a few windmills out in the middle of your farm, and, you know, you probably are doing pretty well. And things that are happening with water ram technology and whatnot, you know, you can have, you know, if you still live in a place where you have decent water flow with a very, very reasonable creek size, you can generate enough power to run your home and with very little environmental impact. So, I mean, the technologies are out there. You know, I love this idea of the geothermal thing in Australia. It makes absolute sense. And if they believe, if investment starts now, that they can actually create base-level electricity for Australia from this single free source, I reckon that that's where you should be trying to go. I just can't see the point of trying to chase up things like clean coal first, which don't exist or doesn't exist. It's still a big pipe dream. And again, you know, I've said it time and time again, remove the incentives that go to coal and oil industries and move them into renewables. You know, we need to use what affordable fossil fuel we have left to start creating the new technology, and we just need to start it now. It's way too late, and I haven't actually had a chance to look at it, but Gene sent me a video that was, I guess, a thing that ended up being a classroom video from 50 years ago. And about the environment back in the mid 1950s, and all of it still holds true today. In fact, it's all just kind of been reaffirmed and proved to be true. So, you know, I say, you know, we're 30 years behind because Jimmy Carter had a clue in the 70s, but it seems as though that, you know, some people understood what was going on from the 50s. And, you know, it's a closed system. I just can't see how you can expect to kind of, like, you know, poo in your own nest constantly and not expect for, you know, the problem to come back at you. But that's just me. So, you know, seriously, Australia's got to get signed on, and hopefully that'll be the final thing that'll force the United States into getting in with the program, because it seriously has to be issue number one. And in the rest of the world, it is. And there are good things being done. The EU has gotten quite organized about setting emission standards and whatnot throughout all of Europe. It's why all cell phones now are actually as green as they've ever been, because of EU guidelines. The manufacturers decided that they couldn't afford to build for the EU, and then everywhere else, with, you know, lead-based solder and all these other things, they've ended up just retooling, and so because of EU standards, one of the biggest creators of technological junk, which are cell phones, which are kind of like a very disposable technology, are now considered environmentally friendly in their construction, removing certain chemical washes and things, and finding other ways to manufacture them that keep them from leaching all this crap back into the soil, into our water systems, blah blah blah, etc. etc. So we're going to take our last break for the day and come back and wrap things up. And so you're listening to Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network, and we will be back right after this.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Claude, Wally, and Dookie are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
The difference between what I do on my show and what all the right-wing types do on their shows is very simple. I'm not going to lie to you. That doesn't mean you're going to agree with me about everything or that you're going to like hearing everything I have to say, but I will guarantee you that when I say something on my show, I say it because I mean it and I believe it, and I'm not just saying it to get you riled up and to boost my ratings. No potty mouth, no trash talking, no BS, just the straight truth as I see it, because the lies may sound good for a while, but the truth is there forever. It's not always pleasant, it's not always nice, sometimes it's hard to see through all the crap, but it's there. And that's what you're going to get from me, and that's why you should listen to my show. The Cup of Joe Radio Show, Mondays and Fridays from noon to 2 Eastern Standard Time on the Head On Radio Network.
Hi, my name is Aaron, and I'm a survivor of mannequinism. Mannequinism is basically when you turn into a hard plastic shell. They say it's from not being politically active. For me, it started when I didn't register to vote. And then I stopped volunteering, and before I knew it, I wasn't doing anything. And that's when I found the first sign. A small, discolored, hard patch of plastic on my right shoulder. I thought it would go away on its own, but it didn't. It kept spreading. when I could no longer conceal it with a t-shirt, I knew I had to see the doctor. He said I had this early stage of manicism and that my only hope was to get involved, even if it was something simple. So I began reading the newspaper and instantly got feeling back in my arm. I guess you could say I'm living proof you can fight manicism.
Protect yourself from manicism. Log on to fightmanicanism.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
All right, everybody, welcome back. We've boxed up here for Thursday evening, Friday morning, if you're down my way. And right before we go to the phones, interesting little piece via Tree Hugger. What it costs environmentally to get 1 liter of bottled water. And they say here, in summary, the manufacture and transport of 1 kilogram of a 1 kilogram bottle of Fiji water consumed 26.88 kilograms of water, 0.849 kilograms of fossil fuel, and emitted 562 grams of greenhouse gases. That's a lot. 1 liter of bottled water is 26 liters of water, a kilogram of fossil fuel, and 1 pound of CO2. Stick to the tap. Get a filter system. So anyway, with that, we're going to get out of the phones. David on line one. How you going, David? Welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you, John. It occurs to me that, and it sounds strange, I'm sure, but that this administration that we have here is intent on inflicting harm and as much harm as they can on the people. It's like it's not just a byproduct of their greed. It is that they are acting to do us grief. And as listening to you, it sounds like your government there is not that far behind. I don't know, but is this a crazy thought, or is it...
No, it's actually that this is one of those things where, you know, Johnny Howard is a big George Bush cheerleader. And I think that this is just another symptom of that fact that whatever the U.S. says to do, John Howard will follow suit. And we have a serious problem here with seriously what is the mafia of a coal industry in this country. And I mean, even just the other day, the actual coal miners union came out to say that they want a carbon tax system. They want Australia to get in on the international agreements because they think it is the future to their survival. And there, it just seems to be this blind following that continues here. But over the last, you know, few weeks, John Howard and his boys are starting to look like real idiots in the media, because they're still playing this very, you know, John Howard came out and answered a question in Question Time where he was asked about the connection between greenhouse gases and global warming, and he said that the jury was still out on that, and the place went nuts. He comes back in 3 hours later saying he misheard the question, thought it was global warming to the drought. And so then he did this whole backpedal thing, but he's looking like a fool on this issue. And I'm just thankful that for some reason enough of the media has gotten involved in the discussion to put it up front. And I mean, this debate last night was fantastic. And reading the transcript, I definitely think is well worth your time. And you will see from Turnbull that same kind of denier, we should be allowed to damage for the sanctity of the economy kind of attitude that you hear in the United States.
Well, pretty much my knowledge of John Howard has come to me through your program. I don't, he doesn't make much press in this country, but your position, or you have to question, and I'd certainly question, is he a knowing part of a crime family, or is he just bungling, listening to Limbaugh and drinking the Kool-Aid? Because I see this government that we have is out to profit, to benefit themselves at any cost to the people that they do harm to, and grabbing everything they can.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, some people wonder, you know, in reference to George W., you know, he comes from that dominionist angle of evangelicalism, where, you know, they believe that the earth is there for man to plunder and use for its profit, which goes completely against the concept of being a caretaker. And, you know, and I just look at what we've been doing as basically, you know, killing our own mother. To me, it's just absolutely, it's insanity. But, you know, it is very similar, the tactics of John Howard and of George W. Bush playing this kind of denier thing and always using the scare that, you know, if we get off of this dirty stuff, the economy is going to fall flat, which is just completely not the case. There is new industry to be created. It's just not going to be the plunder and profit type industry that is fossil fuels.
Well, the Bush and Cheney faction, to me, they lack the ethics of mass rapists. They are out to do harm, and I think they get the kick doing harm.
I'm not going to argue with you there, David. I seriously think, you know, Dick Cheney is deranged. You know, Bush is just deluded. Dick Cheney's deranged. That is a sick man.
Both of them, if my diagnosis would hold up, have a very generalized underlying anger and a desire to strike back at a world that has somehow hurt them. And so punishing people, torturing people, taking away people's medicine, security, that is a way of getting back at a world that, you know, what were they, deprived as children of affection? Were they denied respect or whatever it was? There's some generalized anger and a desire to get even. That's as close as I can come to something.
Well, you know, there was actually a comment. One of Australia's greatest ever concert promoters down here, he and I were having a discussion backstage years ago. And here's a guy who's made his living on other people's talents, you know, putting on shows and things like that. And he said, look, he said, money is the way that the untalented keep score.
He who dies with the most toys wins, I guess.
Bingo. And I think that these are really, really talentless people. They have no good ideas, so they have to, you know, hold on to the things that actually just manifest in power and control. I mean, they don't believe in open markets. If they actually believed in open markets, we probably would be light years ahead of where we are when it comes to things like renewables and alternative fuel vehicles alone. You know, and we would probably be making much greater strides. Is the only thing I can envision.
And I don't think they will ever reach a time where their insatiable greed is satisfied. It would always be that the next billion might be what they really want.
It's never enough, David. And with that, I got to wrap it up. We're just about out of time. But thanks for ringing in, mate. Always good to talk to you.
Stay with it.
All right. So, folks, we're going to wrap up there with that. And, boy, I've just been kind of all over the shop. Hopefully I'll find my brain and get it out of bed along with me for tomorrow. But, folks, thanks for being with us today. Thanks to Zach for producing today. Thanks to Cup of Joe for hanging out in the production chat. thanks to our mods, our bloggers, everybody. Scott Berry at B1 Ladder Productions. The Carpenters, everybody, thank you so much. As we say here on Foxed Up, be good, be green. We'll see you tomorrow.
If ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, tell you that sometimes it's easier to desire and pursue the attention and admiration of 100 strangers than it is to accept the love and loyalty of those closest to me. And I would tell you that sometimes I prefer to look at myself through someone else's eyes, eyes that aren't clouded with the tears of knowing what an asshole I can be. If ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, I might be able to listen in silence to your concerns, rather than hearing everything as an accusation or an indictment against me. And I would tell you that sometimes I use sex to avoid communication. It's the best escape when we're down on our luck. But I can express more emotions than laughter, anger, and let's f***. If ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, if ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, if ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, if ever I would stop thinking about music and politics. If ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, I would tell you that I pooped in my own dog dish. And sometimes I would rather face not eating than face licking it clean and admitting when I'm selfish. And I tell you that I'm suffering from the worst type of loneliness, the loneliness of being misunderstood. More pointedly, the loneliness of being afraid to allow myself to be understood. If ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, I would tell you that the personal revolution is far more difficult than the first step in any revolution. If ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, if ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, if ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, if ever I would stop thinking about music and politics, I would tell you that music is the expression of emotion, and that politics is merely the decoy of perception.